Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. Welcome to your Wednesday night edition of All About Service Dogs. We are so glad to have you listening in. And we are so glad to have Miss Kelly Rose as our guest tonight. And Kelly will be sharing with us an article that she wrote that's getting a lot of buzz, and I wanted to get a hold of her and ask her to share it with my audience here, and she graciously agreed to it. So we're going to get right into it, and Kelly, if you don't mind, go ahead and introduce yourself and let the people know who you are and your relationship with the service dog world, and then we'll get into your article.
Okay, my name is Kelly, and I'm a service dog handler. I've had a service dog for about 4 years now. He's a 6-year-old Australian Shepherd. He helps me with my fibromyalgia, depression, and anxiety attacks. And so I decided to just write an article about how he makes me feel in living with him and how I see it reflected in other service dog handlers.
Well, that lays the foundation. And so that tells us from whom the article is coming from. So if you don't mind, go ahead and take a moment and read that article to us and share that article, please.
Okay. The article starts out as, "A service dog is not a pet that a person drags into a store for fun. They're not a toy, they're not abused, and they're not for entertainment. A service dog is a partner, a best friend, and a lifeline. Life with a service dog. The first time a person has a service dog, it can feel like just another pet, although a very well-trained one, whether they put in the work themselves or a foundation did. The first trip, and even the second and third, can be frightening. You step into the doors of a grocery store, and literally all eyes will turn to you. You hold your breath, then remember to breathe. You try to manage getting a cart one-handed, your other is occupied with a leash. You can still feel everyone staring at you. Some people approach you and ask questions. Some even consider it like, how can I bring my pet in a store like yours? You tell them you don't know and rush away from them. You don't look up because you don't want to see all of the people staring at you. But you can still hear them saying things like, oh, look at that cute dog. Why is there a dog in here? She doesn't look sick. I bet she's blind. Then there's the people who reach out trying to touch him. When you know all this does is distract him. So you avoid aisles of people and pull him away from eager hands. You hope no one alerts a manager so that you're forced to spend several minutes answering questions to confirm you have a real service dog. All the attention makes you sweat because you just want to run a normal errand like a normal person. After all, this was supposed to be a quick shopping trip. You look down at your dog to see he's not fazed by all the attention. He's looking at you eagerly, awaiting his next assignment. You try to rush through your shopping while answering questions about his breed, his purpose, and your disability from curious bystanders. You duck the uncomfortable questions and rush through the rest. By the time you reach your vehicle in the parking lot, you are exhausted and wrought with nerves. Maybe having a service dog wasn't such a good idea. Maybe you can do without him. Maybe this was all a mistake. So you try, a few times, to run those errands without him. But they're harder than answering questions and dodging glances. They're more difficult when you try to pretend that you're normal. No, it's not easy stopping for his potty breaks, his water, his food, along with your own. But everything is harder managing without your partner. Sometimes, even scarier, because our health is a scary thing sometimes. Therefore, you try again. You suit him up, gather his supplies, and walk out the door. You answer the questions, ignore the voices, meet the stares, and verbally correct the hands that reach for him. You work together to build a bond, to read each other's every move and signal. You work together like a well-oiled machine, and you feel like you could read his thoughts. but sometimes the doubt for his need still lingers until the moment comes for all service dog handlers, some sooner and some later, but it will come. That moment when your health, mental or physical, takes a turn for the worst. That moment when all the training your dog has suddenly is visible and he reacts before you know what's happening. He's there doing what no human could or would do for you. He's reacting with speed and knowledge as to his job in this situation. And for most of us, dare I say all of us, that's the moment he literally saves our lives. It's the moment where you realize you did need him, do need him. It's the moment where everything changes, where you know he'll be there again and again to save your life, where you know it doesn't matter what others say or do. It's where you find that bond with your dog that so few in the world will ever know. Service dogs are the very breath of their handlers, the very beat of their heart, and their very soul. We work together to take care of each other in ways that others will never understand, because their life has never been held in the pads of four paws.
Okay, I'm going to guess that long pause means the end.
Yes.
Okay, great. Well, as I said earlier, this article is getting a lot of buzz on the boards of different service dog groups.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how much attention you've been getting from it specifically, but I do know that I've seen it a few times, which is how it's got my attention and what led me to you. I'm glad that the article ends with the positive and the, hey, all that becomes worth it when this dog finally becomes what a service dog truly is, a lifesaver.
Yeah.
And this is something that no fake dogs, no other dog can do. I mean, it's in spades bigger than just an ordinary pet. I mean, just having a pet dog is going to do wonders for your life. Having an emotional support dog is a step higher, going to do good for your life. But having that connection, that bond that a service dog has with its handler and the handler with the service dog, now that really does something. And so I like the way that your article ended. Now let's go back and let's take a couple looks inside, because you kind of read it. Like, let me get through this because it's long. Like, it was an assignment. And so I need to get back into it so I can hear your connection with this writing, your passion, your story. And so how long was it that you said that you had your service dog?
I've had him for about 4 years.
4 years. See, that's a long time. Now, is this your first service dog?
Yes, he is.
Great. And how did you acquire the dog?
I actually got him from a breeder, but I had actually been looking online for a service dog prospect. And I happened to just see a photo of him, and I just knew right that second he was the one. And, of course, I tried to talk myself out of it. You don't want to, you know, build up your hope and then get let down when you actually meet them, because service dogs have to have such a specific temperament to do their job. So we actually traveled 6.5 hours to go see him, and, again, not knowing for sure we were going to take him home. And I met with the breeder, and I met her at a pet store because I wanted to see how he was around the public and animals and just a chaotic environment. and he was really quiet. He was just standing around, and the moment I knew that I was taking him home, a little girl, probably about 3 years old, had ran up and grabbed his face by his cheeks and actually screamed in his face, just a few inches from his face, and he didn't move. He didn't do anything, whereas, you know, most dogs would react fearful or something. And then when she stopped screaming, he reached up and licked her on the tip of her nose. And that was his only reaction to this strange little girl just screaming as loud as she could in his face. And that was the moment that I knew I was taking him home.
Well, cool. Now, when you were looking and doing your research for a dog, did you only look at breeders' dogs, or did you look different places, or
I was pretty open. I did specifically either want an Australian Shepherd or a standard poodle, but I was kind of open to any dog that just had a really good temperament for what I needed, and could do the job.
And remind us, your dog is which, an Australian Shepherd or a poodle?
He's an Australian Shepherd.
Okay. And what was it about the Australian Shepherds that you liked so much in that breed?
They're very, very intelligent. They're easy to train. They're very focused on their handlers. No matter what you're using them for, they're very attached to their handlers. They're not very into strangers, like a golden retriever. They're always happy to see everybody. Australian Shepherds just prefer the people they know and their owners, and they're very aloof with strangers, which would make it easier to teach him to not pay attention to strangers in public and to focus on me. So the making the training easier and the bond I felt we could build would be a lot easier than with perhaps another breed.
Okay. So you went with a breeder. Now, how about the training for your dog? How did you approach your dog's training?
Well, he had actually been obedience titled when I got him. He was in the USAS Top 10 Novice Obedience Dogs. And so he had had a lot of obedience training, so we just continued with that. We taught little things that typical obedience dogs aren't trained, like to wait at doors, to not jump out of the car in the car without permission, and then slowly started working on tasks once he had all the obedience down perfectly, and I felt that he was really reliable in that. So all the training was done myself, and my husband practiced with him as well, and he was a delight to train, very easy to work with.
Okay, which brings me to my next question just so easily. What was your dog training experience before this dog?
Mostly just training my own dogs. All my dogs have obedience training, and I have taken just a few regular classes with my dogs. So not extensive experience at all. Did a lot of research on what they needed to know to be a service dog and public access tests and what they require and everything, just so we knew how to make sure he was ready for the job.
Okay. And what task does your dog do for you again?
For my fibromyalgia right now, he does counterbalance for when I have dizzy spells or feel off balance. For my depression and my anxiety attacks, he alerts to my anxiety attacks when they first start so that I can focus on trying to calm down. And he'll do one of two things. He'll either try to distract me from the anxiety attack, or he does something called deep pressure therapy, where they lay across a large portion of your body, such as your legs or your chest, and the pressure helps to calm the nerves. He just does either depending on the situation. If he can't get to me to lay on me, he will start with the distractions. And then if that's not working, I will sit down so that he can do the deep pressure therapy.
Okay, great, great. So, have you trained with other people, with other people's dogs, or are you just basically the obedience training your own dogs? And with that, are you part of any of the, you know, obedience training clubs, or do you do any of the rallies or any of that with your dogs?
I basically just work with my own dogs. I'm also a dog groomer, so I have helped some of my clients with training issues, but it's not a career for me right now. It's just something I do to help people out, because of my experience with my own dogs. But mostly it's just training with my dogs.
And you're a dog groomer. Now, is that something that you do as a profession, or is that something that you did and the fibro kind of knocks you out of that and you can't do that anymore?
I still do the mobile grooming. I'm actually a mobile groomer, and I go to people's houses and groom out of a trailer that's set up like a salon. Some weeks I can't work as much just because of the fibromyalgia, but I still do it pretty full time.
Okay. Now, what's your area that you cover with the mobile dog grooming?
I do Yukon, El Reno, and Piedmont in Oklahoma.
Do you have a business name?
Yes, it's VIP Mobile Grooming, and you can actually find us on VIPmobilegrooming.net.
Okay. Now, say that real slowly, just in case somebody might want to hear it and might can get you some business.
All right, it's VIPmobilegrooming.net. is the website you can go to.
Okay, great. We might be able to do some good on this year's show. Now, on your grooming, do you groom show dogs or just pet dogs or both?
I mostly groom pet dogs. I do show trims on some pet dogs. I have a few that are groomed proper to breed standards. And I also have poodles, and I show my Australian Shepherd as well. So I show my own dogs, and I have helped other people handle their dogs as well.
Okay, see, now we're talking. We're getting background on this girl who wrote this article. So that article does come from someplace. okay, so let's talk a little bit about dog grooming.
Okay.
And the need for the service dog to be presented as presentable, clean, groomed, if you will. And as a groomer, what would you say are, let's say, the top three things that somebody might notice about a dog real quick, like, you know, on their grooming?
Definitely people will notice if they're dirty, if they just appear grimy or their coat doesn't look very shiny, it can give them a dirty look. People will always notice smell if your dog has an odor, and that's very important with a service dog because you take them into food places and you don't want someone sitting near your table or at the grocery store standing next to you and smelling your dog. The next thing I'd probably say is really long nails. They'll actually make a lot of noise on hard floors, and you can see them, and they are pretty noticeable, and they're actually really bad for your dog's foot health. Really long nails can give them arthritis early and actually even deform their foot if they're not trimmed back enough. And so it's really important for a service dog that walks with you all day long every day that they have short nails so that their foot health is good.
Okay. Now, on one hand, I'm trying to get you some business. On the other hand, I'm trying to help people to not have to come see you. So can you give some pointers to some service dog handlers that might say, you know, I had to pay a lot to get this dog. I had to pay a lot to train this dog. I don't have money to be taking this dog to a groomer once a month or what have you. What are some things that a service dog handler can do at home for their own dog? And could you give some tips or tricks to get that?
Well, you can definitely bathe your dog at home. Brushing them regularly will help keep their coat shiny and also brush off dirt, which is a little easier than bathing them. They also make waterless shampoos, and normally you can get them in like a spray bottle, so you can spray your dog down with it and just wipe them off with a towel if you don't have time or if you're too disabled to bathe them yourself. It's a lot easier just to spray them and then wipe them off with a towel, and that will get rid of odors and help get them a little bit cleaner so you can get them to a groomer or have someone help you bathe them. Clipping nails can be pretty easy, and most groomers are really helpful about showing you how to do that at home. So if you just go to a groomer and you ask them to show you how to clip your dog's nails, a lot are willing to show you how to do that, just so that you can do it at home regularly and you don't have to worry about taking them to the groomer for that. And they can also help you with brush choice, because every different type of hair on every dog is going to need a different type of brush. So let's see, you had like one of the popular doodle service dogs. Slicker brushes are really common on them. On something like a golden retriever, you would use a slicker brush, or for shedding problems, you would use something akin to a Furminator brush to help get that dead undercoat out. For a really short-haired dog, like if you had a pit bull service dog or a Dalmatian or something, you can use like boar brushes, which are will help move the oil through the coat and rake off dirt and everything. For shedding with a really short-haired breed like that, I recommend like a rubber curry brush, and that'll help pull the dead hair out too so that you're not leaving it in stores and stuff when you go. So that might be some things they can try. There's also just like, they look like baby wipes, but they also have dog shampoo that's doesn't need to be rinsed out in them, and you can wipe your dog off with that, or use a washcloth with some shampoo in it just to wipe them off and get any little dirty spots. You don't have to bathe the entire dog if they just got some dirt on them.
Okay. Now, in this argument of keeping the dog clean, there are articles that say, you know, wash X amount of times a week or X amount of times a month or X amount of times. And there's other articles that say, you know, certain dogs or certain breeds or, you know, maybe you shouldn't wash them so much because that's damaging the fur, the coat, the shine, or what have you. Do you have anything to say about that whole argument that's going on?
Well, I will tell you, since I do show dogs are normally bathed once a week or more often. And as you see the dogs in the show ring, they clearly have gorgeous hair and it's not being damaged by all that bathing. So I would say that it just depends on your dog. If your dog smells more often or just has an odor, you can bathe them. Just don't use a really harsh shampoo. I wouldn't use like a greasy dog shampoo. That's normally what they're labeled on the dog. If you're going to bathe it every week, use a gentler shampoo. But if they have an odor or something and you need to get it off, it's not going to hurt them to wash them more frequently. Some dogs can go months and not have an odor or not look dirty just because of the type of coat they have. So if you don't need to bathe that dog that often and you don't want to, then you don't need to. It just really depends on the individual dog. Hound breeds typically exude more oil through their skin and will need baths more frequently than different breeds. So it just kind of depends on your individual dog, but I'm going to say that I don't think it hurts them as long as you're not using a really harsh shampoo.
Okay, appreciate that. Now, a lot of people on a lot of the boards that I'm involved in, they have the argument on the double-coated dogs on whether or not to shave them or to leave the double coating alone, because the shaving, like in the summer, if they're in a southern state, the shaving interferes with that double coat. You have anything or any insight that you would share on that topic?
Well, I can say that among groomers, that's a huge debate as well. So some groomers listening may not like my answers, but I think, again, that depends on the dog. So far, most groomers have only seen it damage the coat or skin if the dog has a pre-existing health condition. The problem arises when you don't know the dog has the condition and then you shave it and then the hair may not grow back or grow back in patches or something like that, which I have seen. And then later the dogs were found to have a thyroid problem or something like that. So unless you know that your dog is in perfect health, I would suggest not doing it for that reason alone. If you have had your dog tested for thyroid issues and other problems and you're confident that they're healthy and you really want to do it, I do think it can affect their ability to regulate their own body temperature. And if you do it too short, there is obviously the risk of sunburn. And, you know, service dogs are out a lot because they're with their owners. So there's the risk that they could be sunburned. They're not going to get the protection from their coat like they're supposed to. I have, obviously, a double-coated dog. I never shave him. Dogs have their own natural process of shedding out the extra hair that they don't need. And that's why at the beginning of the summer, normally in the spring, double-coated breeds will do what we call blowing coat. And they will just drop lots and lots and lots of hair. And it will suddenly look like your dog exploded in your living room. And that's because they're getting rid of all of that winter coat that they built up to keep warm that they don't need anymore. So they pretty much regulate it themselves. And dogs don't sweat. They only sweat through the bottom pads of their feet and their nose. So they're not going to get the cooling effect from shorter hair like we would, because we sweat and the air can hit the sweat and cool us down by evaporating. So they're not going to get the same benefits you would see in a human. And I often tell people, you know, if you went outside in 110 degrees, even if you had almost no clothes on, you would still be hot. So if you shave your dog, they're still going to be hot when they go outside. It's not really going to make that big of a difference. The best advice is just not to take them outside for very long periods when it's really hot.
Okay. Now, I bet you're thinking, man, that doc boy, he's got some questions on him. Yeah, that's what I do. I do this because I like it. Now, a lot of us folks that work with service dogs and are in the industry, we like to tell people that certain things, such as the dog's coat, the dog's size, need to be taken into consideration, especially with what the dog is going to be called on to do when choosing a dog. And you brought up the idea of different dogs need different grooming schedules and different types of grooming. Can you speak a minute as it relates to service dogs? what you might want to look for and what you might want to consider as far as picking out a dog in the grooming of that dog.
Okay. It definitely depends. As you mentioned, some people can't afford a lot of grooming bills. And so if you can't, or if it's very difficult for you to brush your own dog and keep them done yourself, I wouldn't recommend things like poodles or the poodle mixes or anything with long hair that's going to need a lot of grooming. There are small dog service dogs as well. So in that category would be like Malteses, Yorkies, Havanese, anything that has a coat that's going to be regularly groomed. You will either need to pay someone to do that or you will need to do that yourself. So you have to take into consideration how your disability is going to affect that. Are you going to be able to keep that dog brushed out so it's not matted? Are you going to make sure there's no parasites, like fleas or ticks on it, which is harder with long, thick-haired dogs? Are you going to be able to take it to the groomer or afford to pay a groomer to take care of it? I'm a mobile groomer, so I actually do a lot of disabled people's dogs because they can't leave the house, but they can pay me to come to their house. But mobile groomers are more expensive than stationary groomers. So you might even consider, if there's a specific breed you want and you know it's going to need a groomer because you can't do it yourself, calling around to groomers and asking them what the price for that breed is and seeing if you can fit that into your budget. So that might help. If you want a shorter dog, hair dog, they are going to shed. You're going to have hair in the house, and you're going to have to keep them brushed out to make sure you don't bring that loose hair into restaurants or public areas. So that would be like the German Shepherds, the Australian Shepherds, Border Collies, and then shorter haired breeds like Pit Bulls, Rottweilers. So they're easier to brush, though. You won't have to take as much time or as much effort to brush out that hair because it's not quite so thick. Once you decide on a breed, again, you can check with a groomer. And groomers can also do packages to help the dog with the shedding. So if you can afford that, again, that might be an option for you if you don't want to do that at home or can't do that at home. So that's just a little bit different. With the longer breed, you have to worry about more frequent grooming, and they're going to be more difficult to bathe at home and to brush out. Shorter hair breeds are going to be easier, but they're going to shed more hair that you have to watch out for.
So you're saying that the shorter haired dogs, the short hair, the smooth coats, are going to shed less? Are going to shed more than the rough coat long hair?
Yes.
Wow.
The shorter the hair, the shorter lifespan that hair actually has. So it will die and just fall out faster. So a pit bull is going to shed a lot more than a German Shepherd.
Wow. I'm just all flabbergasted over here. For all my years with dogs, and my dog, I don't know if you know, my dog of choice is the St. Bernard. That's what I breed.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, St. Bernards have both long hair and short hair. But everybody complains about the long hair. Oh, it sheds too much, and the long hair, and the blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I need a short hair. I need a short hair. And I myself, I prefer the short hair. But mine is more of a style choice and a historical choice. But that's a different story. But now I got a groomer out here telling me that the short hairs shed more than long hairs. Now I'll sell more long hairs. Okay, good to go. I'll say Kelly said. All right. Go ahead.
No, normally people think the longer haired dogs shed more, but it's just that you can actually see the hair better. The shorter haired dogs, it's harder to see little bitty short hairs all around the house compared to a really long hair laying on the floor.
Okay, that probably is what says it. Because I get a lot of hair. Of course, there's a lot of dogs. But, okay, that makes sense. Now, you did say you show your dog. Now, because I also show dogs, I know that that means your dog is still intact, which I applaud you for that. And my next question is, do you breed your service dog?
Currently, no. We would need a very, very special female for him. So right now we do not have one. So he's just intact, but he is very, very well trained. And so it doesn't seem to affect that any.
Okay, let's talk a minute about him being very well trained and him being an intact male dog and him being in service. I assume that you take your dog out in public access, okay? Any problems whatsoever in your dog getting on a scent of a female who may be in heat and just forgetting all his good training?
We have never had an issue. I'm not sure if, you know, there wasn't an in-season female around. The only time I know for sure we've been around a female that was in heat was at a dog show, and you could tell that she was because the owners were keeping her away from all the males, and he could smell her, but as soon as I gave him any cues, he just followed them and ignored her.
Well, that's super strong training. I'm going to have to send my dogs to you. Was this an AKC? This is just for me. This is a side note. Was this an AKC dog show?
Yes.
Wow, we're really big on saying keep your in-season female home and not bringing her to the show.
But yeah, I was surprised she was there.
Okay. Because that's generally a no-no.
But, yeah, but okay. You never know. Maybe she came in season after they got there. I'm not sure.
Yeah, right. Okay, I believe that. No, I'm not going for it. But anyway, I hope she got her points, and it was worth it to the handlers, because all the other poor little male dogs being distracted and having their training tested, because not all show dogs are also service dogs, so they don't get some of the same training. But that's okay. I won't get on that bandstand right now. I'll just keep talking to you and see what kind of trouble I can get you in. Okay, let's see. Let's talk a little specifically about your article, because I like the article and I think I've given you enough time to prove your value and your worthiness of being a groomer. So if anybody's close to you and wants to check out a good groomer, I think we've sold them on why they should give you a shot at it. Now, this is your first service dog, and you were hoping that you could find a good one in one of two breeds, probably because you actually knew that you wanted to show the dog as well. And those are your two breeds of choice, which I'm okay with that. I'm not mad at you. I believe in breeding, purposeful breeding for service dogs myself, which is why my organization has the stance that it does. So I'm okay with that. And when you started, you got the dog, you said, oh, this is going to make a good service dog. And then you were like, I don't know. I don't know. Did I pick the wrong dog? Oh my goodness. What am I going to do now? And then after a while, the dog started showing its training, which you probably understand from having worked with dogs so long. Dogs go through different periods and different stages. And it does look like they have lost their mind for a period of time. And then they come back to you, and then it looks like they lost their mind again, and it comes back to you. But talk about your relationship with the dog in the early years, and as you worked with the dog and trained the dog, because you trained it yourself, and how that bond grew and grew, and how the dog learned to trust you because you got the dog and it had already bonded with another handler because it was trained to a point already. So it had to transfer its allegiance. And I guess first, about how old was the dog when you got it?
It was actually a little depressing for us because you could tell he definitely missed his owners. When I took him and we were at the pet store and they left, you could see him just looking frantically around for them and trying to figure out where they went because he was clearly bonded to them. And it was sad for me to see that I was taking him away from a home he clearly wanted to be in. We had stayed in a motel because we drove so far to see him, and we took him back, and all he did the first night at the motel was sit by the door and stare at it, waiting for them to come back. So he was very, very attached. Even though he was very well trained by them, he didn't really listen to us at first. We guessed about a number of reasons why, but it pretty much we had to start training from ground zero because he just did not listen to any commands, even though we had watched him go through his whole repertoire of obedience with his owners. He didn't listen to any of that from us. So we had to start from the bottom and work our way back up with everything, from sit, down, stay, leave it, everything. It all had to be retrained just to get him to listen to us. So it took about maybe 6 months or more to get that all down very well so that he was listening completely reliably to us. And a lot of, you know, of that was also bonding because, like you said, he was bonded to somebody else and he didn't want to listen to us because he didn't know us. So we did a lot of bribing him with treats and a lot of just giving him affection, taking him out to the dog park, taking him out on walks and doing things that he seemed to enjoy, just to create a bond between us so that he understood that we were his new family and that we were going to take care of him.
Okay, now how old was he when you got him?
He was two.
Okay, he was two. And this is the age when a lot of service dogs that are program dogs are placed at 2 years old. And so, you know, there are stages of maturation that a dog goes through, like there's stages of maturation that a child goes through, and there's different times in a dog's life when their fear response is greater than other times. And you talked about something that's I'm glad that I have you here to talk about, because others have experienced it, others need to hear it, because others will experience it, especially being an owner trainer. Now, you are somewhat special, not helmet wearing special, but, you know, special, because you were a dog worker and you did train, you know, for show dogs and for obedience beforehand. So you've had some experience. There are a lot of folks that attempt to owner train a dog that have no dog training experience. And with you telling us about your arc And this is why I asked the question of that dog had been 2 years with another family, 2 years with another trainer, and had built that. And, you know, there was an emotional thing that went on in you and an emotional thing that went on in the dog, and probably an emotional thing that went on in the people that had the dog for 2 years. Oh, okay. I was going to say, I don't know why somebody would get rid of a dog that's had him for 2 years, but probably because all they wanted to do was get the dog titled, and then they could get more money for the dog, and then they could sell the dog, and then they go to the next dog and get the next dog titled. Maybe that's what they do. I don't know. But, so you said it was about 6 months or so of working with the dog before you noticed, okay, we're starting to get him across. He's starting to become my dog. And he's starting to look to you as his alpha, if you will. And not like, oh my goodness, I'm a dog outside of my pack. I've got to get back to my pack. And, okay, this is my pack. And so the dog transferred not only from, okay, this is my leader, to this is my charge. So talk a little bit about how in that transition of the dog saying, okay, I'm to take commands from this person. I'm to get nourishment from this person. And from there, that happened like at about 6 months, you say. But take me from there to when the dog started to be your service dog and the dog started understanding, oh, I need to do this for this person.
I would say it kind of started about 8 months or so after we had him. I got him originally for the fibromyalgia and to help me with that. And I've had panic attacks off and on my whole life, and sometimes they're worse than other times. And they had started coming back. And at the time, I had not considered training him for them. And one day, I just started having a panic attack, and his first reaction on his own was he ran and got a toy and kept bringing me toys. Like, he would go find one of his toys, drop it in my lap, and then go get another one. And I realized he's clearly trying to distract me from me being upset. You know, the toys make him happy, so he thinks they're going to make me happy. So that's when it kind of dawned on me, maybe he could do stuff for this too. Maybe we can work on this, making it a task, and just molding that into a reliable task that he can do when I start having my anxiety attacks. So it was kind of his reaction, but I think it built up from all the bonding we had done, working with him to constantly be with me. And I'm focused on trying to help him be a little independent. I didn't force him to be with me, but I encouraged it, and I encouraged his want to bond with me. And so when he did this and started trying to distract me, then every time I had a panic attack and he would do something like that, I would praise him a bunch, get him a treat, encourage him to keep trying to distract me till I could calm down. After that, I started researching psychiatric service dogs, and we found out about deep pressure therapy. And so then I trained him to do that as well. So now he kind of picks which one he does depending on the situation. If he can do the deep pressure therapy, he does that. But if he can't, if I'm standing or we're out in public and he just can't do it, then his reaction is to lick me, to rub his face on my leg, or do any of the other things that I've encouraged him to do to distract me. And it's made a huge difference for me. I was on regular medication for my anxiety attacks, and I don't have to be on that now because of him, just because he's there for me. And my depression and anxiety attacks can get pretty severe, and he just makes such a difference in those moments. And the more we have worked together, the faster his reaction to the situations are. If he feels me tugging on his harness because I'm losing balance, he is quicker to brace himself and stand still so that I can regain balance. If I start breathing fast or something, or do something that triggers him to realize I'm having an anxiety attack, he's quicker to start doing his task to get me focused on him and to change the situation around for me. And you just see that change, and then the more you work with them, and it's pretty amazing to see that he knows he has a job, and that job is to take care of me.
Wonderful. So pretty much what I heard you saying, all these things, is there were certain things that you did, and this was a question I was going to ask, and you answered it, so we're pretty much right there, seeing eye to eye. I was going to ask, how did you win his confidence? In other words, how did you, you know, develop that bond? And as you said, each time that he alerted, each time he served you, each time he did something showing that, you know, he's caring for you, you encouraged it, you praised him, you, in other words, you gave him some positive feedback, which is very great, because they're going to continue to do the things they get rewarded for. And what something you said that I want you to say clearly again, because we do have people who listen, that number one, they need a service dog, or they think they might need a service dog, but they don't have one yet because they can't wrap their mind around the things that they're going to have to do to get the service dog. But you said that there is a medical difference in you because you have a service dog. You are taking less anxiety pills because you have a service dog, which means you are less drug dependent because you have a natural mediation for your condition, which is a very beautiful thing. And you're not a person that markets service dogs nor service dog training. You're just a person that found the need for you to have a service dog, and then you found other uses for the service dog once you had it, and you're seeing the benefits of the dog. So did I hear you right when you said that?
Yes. He has made a huge difference. Let's see. When I first started using him as a psychiatric dog, I was probably taking 3 to 4 Xanax a day. I was pretty just dependent on them to get through the day because my anxiety was so extreme that it was like one giant panic attack all day. I didn't want to leave the house. I didn't want to do anything, even with the medication. With my dog, I possibly take a Xanax every couple months, and that's in extreme situations. And I am okay to leave the house. If I have him, I can leave the house. I can run errands. I can do that. Whereas before him, I couldn't.
Super. Now, I am looking at my clock here, and I'm seeing we're running short in time. And I always like to offer my listeners an opportunity to call in and question or comment on whatever the topic or the guest is of the day. So I'm going to give you an opportunity to give some last remarks and talk about whatever it is you might have wanted to talk about that I didn't ask about. Maybe you wanted to go left and I went right or something like that. And I want to make sure that you feel like, you know, you had good use of your time. Now, while you're thinking of those things, let me go ahead and talk to the listeners. All right, folks, if you have a question or a comment, you can go ahead and call in at 646-668-2499, and you'll be able to voice your question or your comment. And if Kelly so chooses, she can respond. If she doesn't, oh well, you can keep your little question or comment. Now, if you do have a question or comment and you call in, once you get in to the switchboard and you're into the show, then press the number 1 on your keyboard of your phone, and that will let me know that you actually have a question. That pressing the number 1 is kind of like raising your hand. And that lets me know, and then I can get to you. Now, you have about 2 minutes to make that call. So make the call, and I'll know if I need to get to you or not. Okay, Kelly, I'm going to give you an opportunity to, you know, wrap up your interview in a nice little bow so that you feel comfortable on your presentation, and go ahead and share whatever you might want to share, and you don't have to worry about getting it all in because you got time. And if you didn't have time, I would have you back. So go ahead, share.
Well, the main thing with my article that I wanted to share with people, and I hope that the article got that across, was that I see a lot of people question whether they need a service dog, like you said, or maybe they have one and they question, do I actually need this dog? If you have a disability, if it affects your life and makes it difficult, makes, you know, maybe even some things impossible for you, be confident in your dog. Know that he's going to change your life. It may not be right this second, but when you really need him, he's going to do everything he's trained to do, and it's going to change your life so much. It's going to make just a huge difference, and it may not seem like that now. I know, you know, I have anxiety attacks, and so sometimes I can go out and do an errand, and I'll be okay. And so I was like, maybe I don't need a service dog for that. Maybe he doesn't need that job. But when I did have an anxiety attack in public, he was able to be there and make a huge difference. He was able to get me through it, and I was able to realize I didn't need to just leave the store. I didn't need to stop my errand to go somewhere or just, you know, go home because of this anxiety attack. He was there. He helped me get through it, and then we were able to finish what we were doing. That moment will come, and you may doubt that you need a service dog, but if you have him and you have a disability, you have him for a reason, and he's going to prove that to you.
That's wonderful. And I don't know if you actually said it or if I just got the impression and I inferred it, but it takes time to build the relationship with the service dog so that when you do need the dog is going to respond. And that is a beautiful thing and a wonderful thing. And actually, in my organization, we build around that kind of thought that you're building a relationship with the dog so the dog can respond and react when you really need them to. And yep. The dog knows what your normal is because you're with them and you're building the relationship. And so the dog knows when something out of the ordinary is going on. So then the dog knows how to or when to respond. And as you train him, he knows how to respond. And he puts it all together right when you need it. Kelly,
yes,
Rose? Go ahead.
I was going to just say that's exactly it. That's exactly it.
Well, all righty. I am showing absolutely nobody brave enough to ask you a question. And I have grilled you pretty good. And I have asked questions and took notes. I'm going to ask you two more questions so that people won't have to ask me. Now, maybe somebody tuned in late, or maybe somebody is listening to this later on a podcast, and you read through your article pretty fast. Where could somebody actually get a copy of that article so they can read it and digest it and take it in? Because I know when they read it, they're going to say, yeah, that's what I was trying to say. Yeah, this is good. And a lot of people could share this article with other people because they're not as conversant as you might be. And it is a real well-written article. And so some people might want to share it. Where could they find it?
I will post it on my notes on my Facebook page, which will be facebook.com/Oklahoma, and then Rose, spelt just how they sound. And that way anyone can share it from there.
All right. That's real super and real kind. And that last thing you said implies what I was going to ask next is, if you mind, if people would share it. And I do understand that if anybody shares your writing, hey, folks, Kelly Rose, that's who wrote it. Give the girl credit for her writing. Don't just pass it on like it's something you thought of or it's an unknown author. We know who wrote it. Give her credit for it. Now I want to ask you one more time. Give that contact information for VIP Mobile Grooming.
That is VIPmobilegrooming.net.
And the area that you cover?
It is Yukon, El Reno, and Piedmont, Oklahoma.
Now, if I happen to be in one of those areas and I'm at a dog show and I want you to help me prep my dog for the show, do I have to do it before the show, or can I do it at the show, or what?
It would be best to contact me if you needed help, just so that we can plan and figure out what works best for both of our schedules, because I know a lot of dog show people travel from a long way, so sometimes they don't get here till the day before, late at night. So it would just be best to contact me, and we'll figure out when you're going to get here and what we need to do.
All righty. I have done everything that I am supposed to do and everything that I need to do, and I still sound smart and come out of this thing smelling like a rose. And with that, I want to thank you, Kelly Rose, for being a guest on my show tonight and for sharing your article and your knowledge in the grooming area. And I'll pause so you can say thank you. Thanks for having me. Go ahead.
Well, thank you, and definitely thank you for having me. It was fun, and I appreciate everyone that has loved my article and shared it so that you did get to see it.
Well, wonderful. Having said that, I want to invite everybody to come back tomorrow night at this same time. And if you need the link, you can find it on my page, or you can find it right here as you have clicked into this. Before you click out, you can follow. And when you follow, it'll give you heads up on the next episodes and what else is coming up. But tomorrow, you can find us here again. And tomorrow, we'll be talking to a trainer who is going to tell us about what they're doing, how they're doing it in those most wonderful ways. So we will see you here tomorrow. And until then, love yourself, love one another, and love your dog. Thanks for listening in. Good night.